Mini episode 1948 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Chris Galloway and I, Rick Morris, your FDH Lounge original dignitaries, we are moving through the NFL right now, division by division, and today we have gathered to speak of the 2026 AFC West and to give a preview for that specific division. And we'll refer everyone back. If you want to hear any of our big picture thoughts for the season and for the offseason, then go back to the one that we did for the AFC East. Traditionally, the first one that we do is the one where we touch on those things. The rest of these here, we're just talking about the specific division, unless, of course, we get into points of comparison with other teams outside of that. But the intent, anyways, the intent, as it were, is to speak specifically of the teams in this division. And the backbone for our discussion is, as always, the last couple of years, we're taking this from Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. We have a feature towards the back, and that is the one run-on sentence for each NFL team. So going through, this is the predicted order of finish in the AFC West for this year. Here's the teams with their run-on sentences. The LA Chargers, re-adding their healthy bookend tackles, along with adding Mike McDaniel to pilot the offense with an already strong defense, returning means that the Chargers are finally poised to break through their perennial AFC also-ran status, just in time for the Super Bowl to be played in the City of Angels on Valentine's Day. Denver, defense has been the better side of the ball in the Sean Payton era, and it's likely still the strength of the team, notwithstanding a few spots remaining that should be upgraded, but the offensive skill positions are now pretty strong, thus finally putting Bo Nix in the no-excuses spot that should determine once and for all if he can take the Broncos to the Super Bowl. Kansas City. Mahomes may be back surprisingly early in the season, but his effectiveness may not fully be there right off the bat, and the entire picture for the season may come down to whether the team still has question marks at wide receiver and tackle. Las Vegas. The rebuild is still incomplete, as the team still has some vulnerabilities in the trenches, notwithstanding signing the league's best center in free agency, but it's entirely possible that this season can serve as a platform for contention in 2027, with the relatively pro-ready Fernando Mendoza coming into a situation with elite talent at running back and tight end to facilitate his development. Now, I will say this, as we are taping this, there is still some question as to the status of Ashton Gentry after getting hurt at practice the other day, so take that with a grain of salt. Also, when I said that the Chargers are going to have both of their bookend tackles back, might have spoken a little soon on that one as well here, too. It's a little fuzzy, it's a little dicey looking at some of these teams with the injury situations in training camp right now, but that's the order of finish that I've got, and I've got three teams making the playoffs here, with the Chargers finally taking a divisional title, and Denver and Kansas City following behind them. How do you see it, Chris?
Let me ask you, did I miss something today when it came to the Chargers and their tackle situation?
Not today, necessarily.
Their free agent center, and that's a blow.
Nah, it's been the last couple of days where I've been seeing stuff here that there's still apparently some questions, I think, with Slater right now and how he's holding up. And looking at CBS right now, so that's where CBS is listing it as an undisclosed injury right now. Now, they're still only saying, you know, questionable for week one. But, you know, the fact that, again, that he's listed on CBS here, of course, as, you know, limited Saturday. That is a thing where, you know, again, It's not like they're getting nothing out of him here in camp, so they may just be cautious. They may just be bringing him back slowly. I've more so seen innuendos about, he might not be ready to go. So, no, Chris, nothing really to put a firm finger on that I can see right now.
I'm concerned with the Chargers. This man, they have been snake bit on the offensive line. I mean,
they have been, yes.
I feel for him, right? Because, I mean, a team goes as far as the offensive line goes.
Yes.
And that's that. And they already lost their center.
Yep.
So they're going to have some challenges that, you know, 2 weeks ago when I was predicting that, you know, the Chargers would be the first place team in this division, that's going to prove to be even harder now at this point. I'm just going to stick with it and hope that their injuries don't scuttle them. I'm going to say the Chargers win the division. I think this is a division that's going to be, very tight in terms of those teams. All in around that sort of 11-6 range, right?
Yep.
But I'm going to give the Chargers the tie break at 11-6 over, you know, basically the 11-6 Broncos and the 11-6 Chiefs. How's that?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with. Although I will tell you, I have Denver basically as the third place. Okay.
Okay.
I have Denver falling off, and again. I say 11-6 sort of jokingly, but maybe it's more like 10-7. But all right, we'll flip a coin. We'll say 10-7 for the Broncos. So I'll say Chargers, Chiefs, 11-6, tied at the top. The Chargers win the tiebreak. Broncos to 10-7. They're in. The reason is if you look at the Broncos last year, they won so many one-score games, and games where they were losing for big chunks of the game. And I think that those things are not sustainable, right? Like, if that team went basically, like, 14-1 in those types of games, like, that doesn't happen continuously. And so I think they come back a little bit playing a tougher schedule. And so I still think they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to say I'll settle on 10-7. And they're still getting in the playoffs. But they will not, from a win-loss record standpoint, they will not be the team they were last year. Because they will not be able to win every one of those close games. I mean, look at that game in Europe. They should have lost to the awful Jets.
That's right.
And they found a way to win despite losing for like 58 of the 60 minutes of the game.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just like, are you kidding me? I don't think you can. I don't think you can live on that razor's edge.
Now,
continually, I think you're going to win more games.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this: that's. I agree with you with the specific example with the Broncos. By the way, I've got it with Chargers 12-5, Broncos 11-6, and Chiefs 10-7, largely because of my questions about Mahomes early on. But with Denver, I think that, yes, that will be a thing because of the regression from that. But, like, that there is a thing of, like, where I think the sharps sometimes turn into smart marks on stuff of, like, the plexiglass principle. Like, the whole thing, like, the plexiglass principle says that a team that makes a big jump up will necessarily refund at least four of those games the next year. And it's like, that's paint with a broad brush, man. Like, so, some teams make a big jump up, and it is sustainable for them. So the interesting thing is you and I are both looking cross-eyed at what Denver did in the close games last year, and we're still picking them to make the playoffs, albeit not to win the division. So I think you and I are looking at it in a nuanced kind of a way. because merely making a big jump up is not necessarily destiny unto itself when it comes to the next year. As I've said before, I think it will be with New England because of the specific circumstances. They played an absolute joke of a schedule that normally, you know, you'd have to be somewhere in the NCAA to be able to get a draw quite like that. And, you know, playing a real NFL schedule this year, they're going to backslide even with, I think, a more talented team on the field. But with Denver, yeah, I mean, I think that is going to catch up to them a little bit, what you're saying right there, as far as the whole pendulum swinging back vis-a-vis the close games and everything like that. But again, what I feel like the Sharps do a lot is to overstate that kind of stuff going into the next year. And I don't think you can ever paint with a broad brush. You got to kind of do it with a scalpel when you're making these observations.
I generally agree with you. And I think that, you know, I don't think Mahomes misses more than like two games at the beginning of the year. Okay. So, I've got the Chiefs count like 1-1 and, you know, and they'll stick around in it. I know it seems crazy to downgrade the Chargers because of a center getting hurt, but center is so important in that McDaniel offense. I don't think it's going to be a much bigger blow than I think people realize.
Yeah.
And so I was originally thinking 12, and that's why I sort of brought them back to 11 wins, which, again, I was going to have the Chiefs at 11, and so then in my mind I wasn't originally going to be there, but I want to give the division to the Chargers because I think it's that's what I think is going to happen. So, you know, that's kind of where I settled on that. But, you know, and again, I just want to touch on the Raiders. I have them at 6-11, last place. More talent. They're getting better coaching. They're going to be a better team. They're just not there yet. But I have them at 6-11. Just because it's going to be a tough division with three teams going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that. That in other divisions, they might potentially even be further along at this point in time. And that, again, this is all things being equal with Genty right now. But what I've said about, you know, like what Mendoza comes into, you know, in the NFL, that like, yeah, you know, ideally you'd like to see him coming in with a better wide receiver room. But coming in with one of the top young running backs in the game and one of the undeniable two top tight ends in the game. Because much like during the era of Kelce and Kittle, right now it's Bowers and McBride and you draw a line underneath them in whatever order. So he's got one of those two guys. And that is something where, again, those are great security blankets for a young quarterback when you've got somebody like him to be able to pair up with Genty, again, assuming – and, you know, by the time we get this posted, there may be some kind of clarity one way or another with Genty. But any kind of even quasi-optimistic scenario that is going on that anybody has right now for Las Vegas is permeated almost completely, I would say, almost completely on Genty being able to come back in there and be more like what we expected him to look like last year. He last year was so far outside the realm of what anybody had expected him to be. And on the downside, I might add, and FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams, not a man to hold too many grudges. He'll be sticking voodoo. He'll be sticking pins in the voodoo doll of Ashton Genty for the rest of his career based on the way that he turned out last year. A lot of which I would say was outside of his own control. When you're looking at the coaching, when you're looking at the offensive line, when you're looking at everything that he was dealing with there in that circumstance. And we have had Chris drop for the second here, and I am hopeful of being able to get him back on Uno Momento. But Ashton Genty is a guy that really, really, really surprised me and a lot of people to the downside last year. And like I said, a lot of circumstances that were beyond his control, not all of them, but some of them. So I think it's a thing where you're ultimately looking at Ashton Genty being somebody that is going to be very, very, very critical to what happens with the Las Vegas outlook for this season. So that is something to keep an eye on here as well. And I think in terms of the rest of the division. I want to make a point here that Chris had said something about the role of the center in the Mike McDaniel offense, and I want to point out something here, and that is, for anybody that looked at Pro Football Draftology 2026, which is still available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, I always have a list in there. It's 40 players that are going to form the ultimate list for where the top 32 overall players list in the league is going to be in Fantasy Football Draftology 2026 a couple of months later. So it's always like, these are the 40 guys that we're going to pick 32 of them and rank them in order. And that's, again, the criteria for that is that it's a list where if you were starting a team, an actual team, not a fantasy team, on the field and playing for the next year, who would you take? And that's the criteria that we've used across, you know, football, basketball, baseball, and hockey is putting these lists together every year. And there's actually a guy that I put on the final list that wasn't on the initial 40. I don't like to do that because it reeks of false advertising. It was an honest mistake. There was just somebody that I hadn't come across earlier that I should have come across at that point in time. But I happen to be reading a decent amount more about Aaron Brewer, the center for the Dolphins, and how instrumental he was to the offensive success in Miami the last couple of years. So long story, very, very, very long story short, you have Aaron Brewer showing up at number 27 on our list in there. And you'll find that on page 12 of Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page of fantasydrafthelp.com. But our list of the top players in the league, the top 32 players in the league heading into the 2026 season. And so that was something that I wanted to flag as soon as Chris said that, because it was something that I'd learned about, and Chris is back now. And so I spent the tail end of the time that you were away, Chris, and thank you so much for managing.
Apologize for that. I realized that moments before that the computer was like, hey, I'm about to shut off. And I ran to get my charger, and I plugged it in just as it died.
Were you trying to do it on battery? Was that what it
no,
was?
I was doing all our sessions tonight on the battery.
Oh, okay.
And I realized that I looked down, and I realized I was at like 4%, which is why I got up to go run and grab the little charger, because I knew, like, wow, we got like 5-6 more minutes left, and that won't be good enough on 4%. And so I got back, and I was plugging into the wall. And when I was plugging into the wall before I could get it in the computer, it died. Like, that was it.
Here's a general rule of thumb, that trying to do it on battery is a mistake if you know that we're going to be doing the Browns division at any point along
yeah,
the
right.
way.
If we hadn't yeah. spent an hour on the AFC North, I could have gotten it done on battery. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
And I extended the AFC South by talking about Danny Dimes for 10 minutes. So I don't bring up Danny Dimes. We don't talk AFC North. I get through easily the four AFC divisions.
Your gamble works. Yes. Yeah. Your gamble works. But what I was talking about when you were away, I was glad you brought up about another thing that you brought up. You brought up about the role of the center in the McDaniel offense, and that was where number 27 on my rankings this year for the top players in the league right now was a guy that was not on my radar as much until fairly recently when I was just refining the list and putting it together. Aaron Brewer, the role that he played in the Miami offense the last couple of years, and, you know, to what you were saying, the centrality of the offense in that, or of the center in that offense, and how great of a player that he is. And like I said, he only sort of more recently got on my radar as far as being a real standout kind of a player. So that backs up what you were saying about what McDaniel's going to try and do with the Chargers, I think.
Yeah, and again, I think if you don't understand it, that's why that was the most important free agent signing they had. Not that the Chargers really had many. Yeah. They didn't do a lot in the offseason. And they lost a couple guys like Keenan Allen and their defensive end. But, you know, they've got some talent on the defensive side. But, you know, that signing on that center, that 3-year deal, was the thing I thought that was, you know, as long as they could get the tackles to stay healthy this year, was
going to be the thing that really got them over the top was the improvement on the offensive line. And now I got to question that, right? I'm going to stick with them because I want to believe, right? But I do think it's going to be harder than people think, right? And I, if somehow the Chargers ended up going 8-9 after all of it, I wouldn't shock me either, right? Because they didn't add any great talent on the outside. They lost their starting center. The tackles are always struggling to stay healthy. That all goes sideways, right? They could be 8-9, and people will start talking about whether Harbaugh needs to go. But well, I'm going to stick with them. I wanted to all offseason. I wanted to believe. I'm sticking with them. I'm going with the 11-6. They're going to get it done. They're going to find a way against a very tough schedule. And they're going to win the division and get into the playoffs.
And I will say, when you say, again, the Chargers didn't do as much in the offseason, this sounds very, very weird for me to be saying this because I have said for years and that this is one of the weirdest cross-sport continuity things that I've seen is that predominantly in the last decade, there's a lot of L.A. teams, not the Dodgers, of course, but a lot of them that have been stars and scrubs. And that the Rams, even when they won the Super Bowl, were like the world's greatest stars and scrubs team of all time. The Chargers have long been that. The Angels were that before they just became mostly a bunch of scrubs. You see it across sports. It's a weird thing. I can't explain it. But the Chargers have been stars and scrubs longer than most teams that I can remember. And yet, I look at their roster now, and by the way, on the same page as the run-on sentences, I have the remaining team needs. Here's what I got for them. Guard, defensive tackle, cornerback, linebacker. I mean, that's less holes on average than teams in the NFL right now. He's only having, you know, like four, you know, real holes there. And again, the offensive line, that could add to it depending on the status of some of these guys. But, like, the main reason I'm picking the Chargers to win this division, when I never did it the other years that the rest of the world was looking at them with stars in their eyes, is because even those years, it was a thing of like, man, I'm going to hold my breath and believe that this stars and scrubs implement that they have can get it done. This is a team that actually has less holes and is better balanced than most Chargers teams of the past. It's that reason that I'm looking favorably upon them, as well as bringing in McDaniel to work with the offense.
Yeah, I agree with that whole assessment. They are less stars and scrubs than they have been in the past. And what you talk about with those holes, it highlights a little bit like what we touched on briefly in the Browns AFC North, which is, you know, one of the knocks on the Browns is, you know, they don't have a lot of depth. And my argument has been most teams in the NFL don't have a lot of depth. If you really look at their rosters, most of them don't have a lot of depth.
Right.
And so... You know, you're going to eventually at some point in the season have to rely on a sixth or seventh round first or second year player to have to step in for a game or two in a position. Mm-hmm. And that's about universal in the league. Yeah. And again, so the Chargers have a few places like that, like in the guard positions, linebacker, where their depth is a little suspect. And they're going to have to hope that those people stay healthy, right? In the Chargers case, they let Zion Johnson, a former first-round pick, walk. You know, that they took a guy who was a left guard his whole career at Boston College. They tried to make him a right guard. It didn't work. After his, you know, his contract, they let him go. And now the Browns are going to try to play him at left guard, his original position in college. You know, will it work? Don't know. What did the Chargers know that the Browns couldn't figure out? Don't know. But they still have guard issues on the Chargers. So, one of the reasons I was surprised they actually let him walk.
Yeah, and that is kind of an interesting question because, again, just based on the way they've played the last couple of years, and particularly last year, where, you know, we all know that it was the bookends that were the real kind of, you know, bleeding wounds here. But if you were the Chargers, you'd probably be wanting to allocate as much depth on there as you possibly could. So, yeah, anytime they let a guy walk who's even a borderline starter, you do kind of have to squint a little bit and go, what's going on here? But all things being equal, yeah, I mean, I think they're in the best position that they've been in the last couple of years. I think, again, There's a lot of onus that's going to be placed upon Bo Nix right now because, you know, you'd said it in an earlier segment that had he been healthy, Denver would have gone to the Super Bowl. I think the outcome would have been the same, even if the game would have been a little less ugly if it was Denver in there. But I don't think Denver was beating Seattle last year. But again, it's a what if because he wasn't in there and we didn't get a chance to see it unfold. And then for Kansas City, we're starting to get to, you know, they're on the back nine. I'm going to say the beginning of the back nine. And when we look at sports science and the way that it's gone, I mean, Mahomes turning 30 is not necessarily a thing like with, you know, 10, 15 years ago, whatever, because whatever you look at with, you know, with sports science, like with Brady and everything like that and the stuff of like, you know, platelets and maybe a little bit of extra stuff here and there if you're picking up what I'm putting down, but you know, quarterbacks have greater longevity later on. Look, Matt Stafford had the best year of his life at what, like age 37? Which I will say this, like if this was baseball in the late 90s, we'd be looking at him like, what's going on, bro? So, you know.
Well, so, if you remember, and we'll get to it in a future segment, you know, spoiler alert for NFC West. Last year, I mean, I liked the Rams, right? But then I also said, it's only as far as his back will take them.
Yeah.
Like, I was picking the Rams to go to the go to the NFC Championship game, but at the same time, I'm like, if his back snaps in half in week three, don't be shot.
Yeah.
Right. He had an amazing season. But that's another one where you're going to wonder, like, we're going to assume he's going to keep that back and he's going to stay upright. I agree with you about the Chiefs. They are hitting a bit of a wall with some of their older talent, and I'm not including Mahomes in that because he's of an ilk that he'll play till he's 40.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking some of the other folks on that team. I just think this year's going to probably be like a fake resurgence, right? Like, make people like it's like they're back. Last year was the fluke, and then next year they're going to fall back. That's what's really like, this is that, you know, when people die and they say like, I can't believe they died. Like just yesterday they were up and talking and they were energetic. And it's like, there's a phrase for it when it's like they, you know, when people get a burst of life right before they die. You know, and I witnessed that with my own mother before she passed. You know, I think that's the Chiefs. I think next year is back to, you know, 8 and 9. More injuries, Kelsey's done. You know, I just think this is the year where they pretend they're still alive and surge and you know, finish with 11 wins, win a first-round playoff game. They get beat by the Bills, and they don't get there, and everybody says, bah, the Chiefs are back, though. But they're not.
I understand your analogy. I don't know if I quite subscribe to it because I'm not necessarily sure they're going to fall off in 27, but I will say this. It'll be memorable to me in the sense that, like, the next time that somebody tells me that I have made a particularly morbid point on the show, I will be able to say, well, I never compared a football team's outlook to literal death the way that Chris just did. So, you know, that's... You're not necessarily wrong, but it's an interesting framework, I'll say.
I mean, there's a lot of, and again, I kind of would use the same analogy with the Steelers, right? I mean, old team, old expensive defense, assuming Rodgers hangs it up after this year.
Yeah.
We don't know that they have a quarterback. It's not Will Howard, right?
No.
So right now on their roster, the only guy that maybe it could be would be Drew Aller. That's it. And we don't know. So right now you'd have to say the Steelers don't have a quarterback. And, you know, I would say that same thing here. Like, they'll get a boost because of McCarthy. And they're going to get a boost because Aaron in his last year. And they're gonna look okay for some part of this, the first half of this season. Right? Yeah. And then I think, you know, that's when, you know, for whom the bell tolls. I think the Steelers are in for that same surge before death.
Them I agree on. And I will say that FDH Lounge dignitary Ron Glasnap being another Medina boy, is clinging to LR being the guy for Pittsburgh going forward. And it's just like, he ain't. And it's a thing where Ron, a relatively gentle guy, the only time in my life when I've ever seen him where he was getting ready to punch somebody, it was me a year ago at our fantasy football draft when I was making fun of LR for being a stiff. So, but I cling to my opinion. I don't think I'm wrong about that. He ain't the answer for them going forward. They don't have the answer going forward. Kenny Pickett wasn't the answer beforehand. Again, the Steelers always want to try and do it on the cheap, and you can't. You really can't count on.
They invested a top 15 pick on Ben Roethlisberger back in the day, so it paid off for them. I don't know about Jewel R. I mean, look, I'm like you. I didn't want any part of him because I didn't see enough in college.
Right.
That told me that he could be an NFL quarterback. Although I will say this, athleticism, arm, prototypical size, he has all of that. There is no doubt. So he does have a bunch of the tools. I think for him, I've kind of started to wonder about the Penn State coaching. Like, I wonder how much, if he got some good coaching, they might actually be able to salvage that kid.
Well, and that's
so that's why, unlike you, I'm not willing to completely say not going to happen, because I actually know, and you know this as a former Browns fan, if there's anybody that could end up being a great quarterback, it'll be a kid that grew up in his entire life as a Browns fan. The Browns don't take him, and he goes to the Steelers to become a Pro Bowler. That's exactly what would happen to our fans.
Yeah, and that's by the way, former and at some point possibly future. All I said at the time was not as long as Watson's here, but I'm starting to see that like him leaving isn't going to be the cure-all as long as Haslam joins the team. So who knows how long I'm in exile. That's an open book. But on this one here, and I kind of agree with you a little bit, but like we said, the same things about LR when he was in there. People were like, oh, Connor Cook's going to be the next guy. Like, Penn State quarterbacks haven't been able to cut the mustard. I'm sorry. It's a thing of like, I've said to you before, like Drake May has proved me wrong on North Carolina quarterbacks, but they had a string of guys that were frauds. Some schools, you're kind of guilty until proven innocent. And until Penn State actually produces somebody that plays at the NFL level and breaks that curse, you know, I'm probably not going to believe it. So there's just something about certain institutions that keep churning out guys that don't quite cut the mustard. And Penn State has had that track record. Now, again, that was, you know, the Franklin era. I don't know that in the Joe Pa era, for all the other things that were done, illicitly and otherwise, but on the field, even, you know, Joe Pa wasn't really renowned for churning out quarterbacks, was he? So, you know, even then, it wasn't necessarily the case. Maybe it'll be different with Matt Campbell. I struggle to think of anybody he churned out at Iowa State that even had that big time of a rep, though. So it's
true, but he did churn out Brock Purdy. So we'll give him some flowers.
Purdy was at I forgot what school he was at. Okay, well, he deserves some credit.
Iowa State.
Okay,
Iowa State.
And Purdy is holding up pretty well, notwithstanding the substation issues. So you got to give him credit for that as well. So,
well, and I would say, is that Purdy, or, you know, is Iowa State Purdy? I mean, I think he had to learn how to win with less talent there. But again, that comes back to coaching and Shanahan.
Yeah.
And I would say that one thing that Drew Allar has going for him, again, not to make this a Drew Allar segment on the AFC West segment, but you know, maybe you could edit this and stick it in the back of our long Browns diatribe.
Let's get it over an hour.
Yeah, but the, you know, that's where you know, I say, like, Allar has the physical traits and all those tools you salivate for as an NFL quarterback. Coaching, right? Can, you know, Mike McCarthy's been a really good quarterback coach. You know, I think he has a lot of flaws, but quarterbacks, is developing them is not one of them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the one thing going for that kid, is that he might be in a good situation in terms of the coaching, where he has a chance to actually develop those traits where he didn't have that at Penn State. But I digress.
Well, I think those are very good points. So, you know, we'll have to see what the development is. And I think that, again, we may see LR getting a chance to play this year for Pittsburgh once they are out of it, which, according to me and you, will certainly be by the second half of the season. So that will be very interesting to see how that cuts into the old Aaron Rodgers retirement tour. So, but as far as the AFC West goes, again, you and I predicting that to be yet again, probably by a wide ass margin, the class of the AFC here, taking three of the seven AFC playoff spots. And you and I largely agreeing on the playoff field for the AFC. We'll see if that carries over to the NFC once we get into that. We had some areas of where we differed last year. You famously, I went with my big gamble on the Raiders to be a wild card team last year. You did likewise on the Giants to win the NFC East. So both of us had our moments that we wouldn't want repeated. From that,
they went big. I did. And we'll talk about it in that NFC East section. I went big with the big gamble on Malik Nabers, who I think is, if he can stay healthy, I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I went for it, and boy, was I wrong. And I thought that defense would carry them, and it just didn't work out. So,
yeah, the alternate universe scenario where each of us is right and the Raiders and Giants are playing in the Super Bowl certainly did not come to pass last year.
Well, neither one of us had them there, but
no, but each of us had one of them. So that would have been hilarious. Each of us would have been able to claim a lot of justification were that the case. But yeah, we'll see how the NFC plays out, but we've run through all of the AFC and we will be revisiting it in the final segment of our nine segment series when we look at the early playoff picks and Super Bowl picks for this season. But we've got the four divisions of the NFC to get to, and we'll be resuming with the NFC East. So again, many thanks to Chris Galloway. I'm Rick Morris. I thank you a lot for being here and checking out FDH Lounge preview for the 2026 AFC West.